Ladies and gentlemen, it is my privilege and honor to officially introduce for the first time graduating class of...
There's only one boss in this place, and that's me, the H-N-I-C.
Much matter what happens tomorrow. I'm gonna blow your pinky toe.
Oh, now you're gonna shoot me in my pinky toe.
You need a chauffeur.
Lord knows.
Let me tell you the story. Right hand, left hand, good and evil.
Hate, love. These five things, they go straight to the soul of man.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So here we are at the end of our journey. And as we approach the 35-year mark.
35 years? It's already the 35th anniversary of the class of 1989?
Class reunions come very, very quickly.
Oh my God. What am I going to wear?
But it sounds like this is a perfect opportunity to ask the question.
Where are they now?
Where are they now?
Well, let's start with Lean On Me.
Fair East Side. Fair East Side. By thy side will stay and always praise thy name.
Praise thy name, praise thy name.
Lean On Me. What is the legacy of Lean On Me? What do we talk about Lean On Me in 2023? I mean, of course, we have the evergreen subgenre of film, which is about educators.
Educators making a difference.
With the kids.
Doing it for the kids. You know, there have been films, many films that have follow in his wake, never mind the movies that came before.
Sure.
Like
To Sir With Love.
From 1967 with Sidney Poitier teaching a class of unruly high school Brits. He tried to do it again, getting a piece of the action in 1977 with his pal Bill Cosby as they taught some youth center youths the difference between right and wrong. But then after 1989, you get the Michelle Pfeiffer movie.
Dangerous Minds.
From 1995, which comes out, funny enough, the same year as Mr. Holland's Opus, starring Richard Dreyfuss. And, let's be fair, Lean On Me hits theaters a year after Edward James Olmos scores in the true life story of teacher Jaime Escalante in Stand and Deliver. But I really think that the legacy of Lean On Me is an attempt to be more realistic in the depiction of what is happening in the inner city. Like, I'm not going to say that those things did not happen in those schools, but the way that it is dramatized
sure,
in that movie
sure.
is definitely over the top.
Sure.
Even though Joe Carter, he was quite a character.
Yes. And it is a concept that continues to resonate. It's only been in the past few years that LeBron James was trying to develop a project based on Lean On Me. And then certainly one of the main through lines of our entire project is in Lean On Me, and that would of course be Morgan Freeman. And certainly this is part of his legacy.
I want all of you to look at this slovenly, sloppy boy here as an example of how not to dress. Now, if you look like this when you look in your mirrors in the morning, find something else to put on. Self-respect permeates every aspect of your lives. If you don't have it for yourselves, you're not going to get it from anywhere.
Morgan Freeman would go on from 89 and continue to be one of the more accomplished and hardest working people on showbiz. He showed up everywhere. But I would say that 1989, not so much because of Lean On Me, but because of two other films that we'll talk about in 89, I think they progressed his development into the sage old black man in movies a few years premature.
Well, I think the difference between Lean on Me and the other two projects, he's a lot more, for lack of a better word, virile.
In Lean on Me.
Like he's a very active, athletic presence, as opposed to, whereas, as you say, he seems to be aged.
Yeah.
Which is a mode that you see Morgan Freeman in almost exclusively after this.
Pretty much. It's hard to imagine that it wasn't not that long before this movie that he was up for an Academy Award from Street Smart.
Exactly.
Where he plays like this cool, is he a pimp?
Yeah, oh, he's a pimp.
Straight up pimp.
Yeah, he's a pimp. Movie. And a very aggressive, vicious one.
You did fine. Hey, I thought you guys were great.
Who do you think you patronizing now? She might take that shit, man. I don't. I don't have to go to Harvard to know what you're doing. You know what I'm trying to say to you, man? Do you?
Yes, I do.
Well, then shut the fuck up.
A role you cannot see Morgan Freeman in today.
You don't tell me how people react to me. I know what people are doing no matter what they say. Because I read minds, you dig? I don't take no shit off of you. Lying through your fucking teeth. I know it, you know it, and this fucking don't know it.
Come on, leave him alone.
Yeah? Yeah? Night's over. Come on.
What are you doing?
Whatever the fuck I want. Get in the car.
And Street Smart is 1987. So, absolutely. Speaking of legacies and legacies with elder statesmen, certainly one of the great parts of the legacy of Harlem Nights is you have this documented footage of these legends in one place that we all can go back to.
Yeah, yeah. You got Eddie Murphy riffing with his inspirations.
Yeah.
In Red Fox and even more so, of course, the great Richard Pryor.
Sure.
And also, you know, going one-on-one with Della Reese.
Sure.
First of all, one of the legacies or impactful things about this film is for this to be pretty close to the end for both Richard Pryor and Red Fox.
Absolutely.
This will certainly be the last time we will see a really strong or even reasonably strong Richard Pryor.
Sure.
His physical condition would diminish very rapidly.
And because of their chemistry in this film, this led to the very short-lived sitcom with Della Reese and Red Fox, where tragically, Red Fox died on the set.
Right. What's that? The Royal Family.
The Royal Family.
We're not shooting. We're rehearsing a scene. And of course, they sent someone to walk back. And this man says, "Where is Red?" And I said, "He's having an interview with Entertainment Tonight." I said, "But he doesn't have any lines here. He just has to walk. If he's supposed to walk past, he should be in here to walk past."
Della Reese relates that tragic story about her friend for the Archive of American Television in 2011.
And when Red gets out there and finds out, all he has to do is walk across the back of this that anybody could have done, he becomes livid. And he falls. Well, he was always doing pratfalls. And I thought that's what he did. Everybody thought that's what he did. And he was laying on the floor, and I leaned down to him, and I put my hands on him. He said, "Get my wife, get my wife, get my wife, get my..." I said, "Somebody get paramedics, and somebody go get Mrs. Fox." And they went and got her, and they pronounced him dead.
The other thing is that this is Eddie Murphy at the height of his powers, putting his friends on in this movie. You talk about Robin Harris, who's a protege of his brother Charlie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, also in this film. But it is still very much an Eddie Murphy joint. He wrote the story. He directs the film. This is his only directorial product.
Right, to this day.
I'm not going to say it's the most smartly directed film, but it definitely has a confidence to it. And you could talk about the legacy of Eddie Murphy as a Black comedian, top line of movies going forward, as other comedians follow in his wake. Eddie Murphy proves to be the most generous on screen.
Yeah.
You see that on play here in Harlem Nights. We've certainly talked about how he has been generous in some of his other works as well, most notably Boomerang.
Right,
where
right.
He pretty much is the straight guy.
Right, right.
And it's a lesson that I don't think the comedians who have followed in his wake to try and become the quote-unquote next Eddie Murphy, your Martin Lawrence, your Damon Wayans, your Chris Rocks, I don't think it's a lesson any of them ever learn. And I actually just think that that speaks to the greatness of Eddie Murphy. There's charisma, and then there's Eddie Murphy.
Right. And speaking of just legacy and where are you now, I think the one thing that is noticeable about the bigger Eddie Murphy projects of the past decade, whether you're talking about Eddie Murphy in Dreamgirls or Eddie Murphy in Dolomite Is My Name, or Eddie Murphy in the sequel to another classic Eddie Murphy film from around this period,
Coming to America.
I think there is, regardless of the varying degrees of success of these films, this line that connects them of this generosity that you speak of, where in all of these projects, you see moments where Eddie Murphy allows other people to have the spotlight and have the stage. And I think you're right. You can, in many ways, you can trace it to Harlem Nights.
Quick! I'm gonna kill you, quick! You made me shoot one of my boys in the back of the head! And I know you had something to do with what happened to my brother, quick!
Yo, man, I don't know what you're talking about!
That's bullshit, man! You know what I'm talking about!
And speaking of sharing the stage, we have to talk about Glory, which features two phenomenal actors going at it. And three, if you want to throw in Matthew Broderick in the lead role, but Morgan Freeman and Denzel Washington, a young Denzel Washington, still learning how to smolder on screen, right? In a film that has become iconic because it is one of the great war movies of all time, but it has possibly Denzel Washington's most iconic scene in it.
Certainly.
Single tear.
That single tear.
It speaks volume of the filmmaking that that scene is indelibly etched in the Mount Rushmore of great scenes.
Sure. What can you really say about the legacy of Denzel Washington? Mm-hmm. In many ways, from this performance. Like, this is one of the performances, much like we talk about Morgan Freeman in this year. This is one of the performances that launches Denzel Washington as Denzel Washington, the icon.
Well, I ain't much about no friend now.
Well, all right. All right.
I never had no family. Killed off my mama. You feel funny, don't you?
Come on.
It's all right. Right.
Enjoy.
Come on, man. You're doing fine. Y'all's the only family I got.
Well, that's our family. That's all right.
I love the 54.
Right.
Ain't much a matter what happened to Mom. But we men ain't.
Yes, sir.
Amen.
Amen.
There's always an appetite for historical dramas. But I think in retrospect, as we kind of deal with this post Nicole Hannah Jones, Ta-Nehisi Coates, 1619 critical race theory mania, topsy-turvy world that we live in now, you have to admire the bravery of a film like Glory that depicts this moment in history, that doesn't have a happy ending.
No,
that shows some of the ugliness that these men had to go through, even though it is through the eyes of this white officer. Like, in many ways, this is the type of unapologetic depiction of the past that you don't necessarily get a lot of anymore.
No, you don't. And smart on them, the filmmakers, to, as we talked about with Carla Brothers on the episode, smart of them to realize that the love story that had been written into the script, it wasn't necessary.
Right.
Because it took your eye off where you wanted to be. You wanted to be with the 54th Black Regiment.
Right.
That's where you wanted to be. And you lived in the trenches with them. Every one of them. You know, we haven't even mentioned Andre Brower doing phenomenal work in this film as well. This is one of the films, alongside Saving Private Ryan, that war movies ever since, this is their North Star.
Look, to your point, I think these films have aged in varying degrees, but Glory definitely has aged well. It is a film worth returning to outside of a historical context, appropriately enough. You know, just as a snapshot of this moment.
Yeah. Speaking of aging not well, we come to Driving Miss Daisy. It bears repeating, winner of the Academy Award for Best Picture for 1989.
Yes.
Starring Jessica Tandy, also Morgan Freeman. I think this is the film that cemented Morgan Freeman.
Absolutely.
As the wise Negro.
Absolutely. Certainly you get a version of that in Glory. But this is the moment.
Yeah, this is the
moment. This is the moment here.
This is it. Hope is the role. And what can you say about this movie, except as history has shown us, these type of slights to the Black experience, to Black art, to Black masterpieces continue to happen and will continue to happen. Fast forward from 1989 to Green Book.
Once again, here are the nominees for Best Picture. Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Green Book, Roma, A Star Is Born, Vice. Oh, and the Oscar goes to Green Book.
And I think you skipped over The Help.
But I don't think The Help won for Best.
No, I'm just talking about Hollywood returning to this really, frankly, ahistorical well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is just not what happened. But I have to say, love it or hate it, and frankly, I hate this film. You cannot deny this is a film that continues to evoke emotions, evoke strong emotions from people. This is a film that a large part of the American public still has an appetite for. I know the play that the film was based on had a revival in the past 5 or 6 years with James Earl Jones in the Hulk character. So regardless of your personal feelings for this film, and again, I have very strong feelings about this film, I would never deny this film's importance or its legacy.
I am a fan of this film. Right. I'm a fan because I'm a fan of the storytelling. I'm a fan of the performances, but I do acknowledge the messiness of it.
Mm-hmm.
Its legacy is that it gets disregarded at hand. Now there are probably more people who haven't seen it and just know it as this either punchline,
right,
or oh my God, that beat Do the Right Thing.
I agree.
Picture.
I agree with you.
To be frank, ladies and gentlemen, it did not beat Do the Right Thing for Best Picture.
No, it did not.
Because Do the Right Thing was not nominated.
Do the Right Thing was not nominated. It beat the other films that were nominated.
Yes.
Do the Right Thing was not invited to the party.
It was not.
The irony, of course, is that when we talk about the legacy of these films, when we talk about the films that have aged the most gracefully, if we talk about the films that have gained prestige,
mm-hmm,
as time has gone on from 1989, I don't think anyone can deny that Do the Right Thing is the film that not only was the most likely to succeed, but succeeded.
Oh, yeah. They came back for the class reunion, high-stepping, you know, limo, bottle service, Do the Right Thing has been heralded as one of the greatest films of all time by the American Film Institute.
Sure, sure. And that's just one,
yeah,
of the many accolades that it has received since 1989. This is the film that cemented Spike Lee's reputation,
mm-hmm,
as a filmmaker of note, mm-hmm, as a master filmmaker. And certainly he has had a very productive career,
yes,
since, yes, this. He has, much like Eddie Murphy, I would argue, really gracefully moved into this elder statesman role.
As of late.
As of late.
I would say that, most certainly.
So,
most certainly. But he has made some of the most seminal movies over the last 35 years.
Absolutely. This is not someone who rested on his laurels after Do the Right Thing.
No, he did not. And he paid it forward by introducing into the Hollywood sphere creatives such as cinematographer Ernest Dickerson.
Absolutely.
And Academy Award winning costume designer Ruth Carter.
Absolutely.
And that's just the name too. And never mind just all the people that he routinely would work with.
Sure.
Who became kind of like part of the Spike Lee repertory theater.
Sure.
If you will.
Sure.
In all of his films. At times in reading interviews with him, I have felt like, Spike, yeah, did you really mean that? But you're saying it with your chest, and I can't be mad at you for that.
He is
100% his own man.
He has always been a man of great passion. Mm-hmm. He has always been a man that has never bitten his tongue. And when that passion and when that fire is honed, sometimes you get films like Do the Right Thing.
That's true.
So,
always interested in what's next with Spike Lee, even if I, you know, sometimes I don't agree with all of his films. I love the Black Klansman.
Sure.
The Five Bloods, I could, you know, take a leave.
Sure.
But I'm always interested in what's next.
And you're always interested in what's next.
I could give a f- about money. You see this f***ing place? I built this f***ing place with my bare f***ing hands. Every light socket, every piece of tile, me with these f***ing hands. You know what the f*** that means?
Yeah, it means pay me my motherfucking money. That's what it means, Sal.
Speaking of the more things change, if you will, it's almost like the narrative wrote itself as we talked about doing the where are they now and what are the legacy and certainly the journey that we've had as we've put together this project with Usain Palsy.
Mm-hmm.
And A Dry White Season, and the role that Black women directors have had to almost force their way into and make their own place at the table.
Yeah.
And Usain Palsy at this moment making this film. And I think the legacy of this moment is all of the wonderful Black women directors that have followed in her wake that we talk about. But the other side of that is all of these wonderful Black women directors who do not get the credit they should get.
We've talked about more than a few of them here on the Michelle Mission, I immediately think of Cheryl Dunier.
Sure.
The director of The Watermelon Woman.
Mm-hmm.
We both are huge fans of Nia DaCosta, director of the Candyman remake and one of our favorite films of the last few years, Little Woods with Tessa Thompson. And of course, following immediately in the wake of Usain Palsy, you had Cassie Lemons.
Yes.
Doing great work. Ava DuVernay. And of course, Julie Dash.
Julie Dash.
Goes without saying, from the great L.A. Rebellion. I love the door. Speaking about Ava DuVernay, I love the door that she opened up for a lot of Black directors with her projects. As her stature rose, she intentionally shared the spotlight by using only women directors, including Dash and Dunier, on her breakthrough TV venture, Queen Sugar. DuVernay elevated other prominent filmmakers such as Demaine Davis, who gave us the indie thriller Lift in 2001, and Stacey Muhammad, who's worked on The Best Man, The Final Chapters, and Amazon's delightful comedy Harlem, which I really like. In fact, it was on Queen Sugar where I found out that the actress Sally Richardson Whitfield had moved from in front of the camera to behind the camera as a director. And now, lo and behold, she is not only directing, but executive producing on HBO's The Gilded Age, another show that I like.
But as we tape this, we are still reeling from the snubbing of Chinua Achebe, the director of Till, and the great Gina Prince-Bythewood for Woman King.
Yeah, two slights from the Academy yet again.
Yet again.
Can't say that they were beaten for Academy Awards because they were not nominated.
Because they were not nominated.
Like you said, women have had to make their lane. And the unfortunate thing is that Black women have also had to a degree, make their peace with how some things are and be lifted up by the accolades that are bestowed upon them by their community.
Yes.
Because while Till and The Woman King were not recognized by the Academy Awards, each has received its share of accolades during the 2022-23 awards season. Danielle Detweiler's Grace as Mamie Till was awarded by the Gotham Independent Film Awards, the Black Reel Awards, and the National Board of Review. While The Majesty of the Woman King and its director Gina Prince-Bythewood and star Viola Davis was celebrated by the American Film Institute, the Black Film Critics Circle, and the African American Film Critics Association, with nominations for other awards still pending for both films at the time of this recording.
Absolutely. And going forward, they will have their own legacies.
And they will be the heads of their own class.
But here, the class of 1989, we want to thank you for joining us.
We do.
On this journey.
Thank you. Thank you. Every one of you who took the time to check out our podcast, The Class of 1989, and if you have enjoyed what you heard, you enjoyed sitting around with Vincent and I, then please check out The Michelle Mission, Two Men, One Podcast, where we review and dissect every Black film ever made. Available where you find podcasts. The Class of 1989 is produced by Len Webb, Vincent Williams, and Mo Poplar. Written by Len Webb, Vincent Williams, and Mo Poplar. Edited by Len Webb. Mixed and mastered by Chris Bonilio. Production help from Jordan Aaron. Marketing by Joni Douche, Matt Keeley, and Annabella Pena. Music by Alexa Gold.
Art by Tom Grillo. Special thanks to Dan Christo, and executive produced by Jeff Umbro and The Podglomerate. All right, ladies and gentlemen, until next time, he's Vince, I'm Len, and in parting we say,
we'll see you when it's time to meet again.